You're listening to Spirit of the Valley on 95.9 KGVM Bozeman. We've been talking with Alexis Brill, widow and solo parent, about her journey with love and loss. Let's get back to our conversation.
Do you have a sense, or did you ever have conversations with him about where he thought he was going when he died, or if he had an idea of what death was going to be?
He said, you know, I did have an opportunity to ask him some questions. This is after we came home from the hospital, mm-hmm. but before he started in home hospice. And this was a couple weeks before he started becoming, you know, he had like end of life dementia at the end, where he was nonsensical, right? He would say things that didn't make sense, and you couldn't have a conversation with him. You could ask him yes or no questions, but you couldn't have a conversation with him. So I'm so grateful that I did this before he became, you know, kind of unresponsive. Mm-hmm. And I recorded it. Mm-hmm. I recorded it for our daughter. Mm-hmm. And it's about 20 minutes, and I got to ask him a bunch of questions. And when I listen to that now, I can see that despite his outward actions of trying to do anything and everything to save his life, and despite his panic and anxiety, he really did accept that he was dying. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he said in the recording, "I don't know if I'm going to make it. That's the hardest part about this, is the unknown." He said that he would always be with us. And mm-hmm. he said that he would always be with our daughter, and he wanted her to know how much he loved her. And he wanted her to know that he wanted for her to be true to herself always, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I got that recording. And I think he believed that he was going to be in a beautiful place, mm-hmm. and that he was going to still be with us. And that's what I believe. I believe that he's not in any pain, that he's free, and he's in a beautiful space, and he's with the people that he loves the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for you, where Andrew is now is still with you in mm-hmm. in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely believe he is. And I feel his presence at times. And I talk to him at times. My daughter, you know, my daughter will say things like, she'll just randomly start talking about daddy. Mm. And I say, "Where's daddy?" And she'll point to certain parts of the room. Mm. And I believe that young children have an ability to sense things like that. Mm-hmm. And I sense it, and I ask Andrew for specific things to show me that he's still with us. Mm-hmm. And I see them. Mm-hmm. And that's really beautiful. And I really truly believe that he's in, you know, people will say things like, "Oh, they're not in any pain anymore. They're in a happy place now." And it doesn't feel good to hear from others. I don't think it's an appropriate thing to say to a grieving person. However, I truly believe that Andrew is in a beautiful place. Mm. And I truly believe that he's free of pain and suffering, and he is floating between our house and wherever we are, and his parents' house and the house that he grew up in. I asked him where we could find him. Mm-hmm. You know, after he died, I said, "If you die, where can we find you?" And he said the room that he grew up in his parents' house. Mm. So, you know, I think that he's kind of, I envision him floating between our houses and between wherever we are. And also in this beautiful place full of light and love and amazing energy. That's where I believe he is.
Yeah. So such a wonderful image, and I mean, I feel like it mirrors so much of what your relationship was, of just like those moments of joy and adventure and beauty, and you know that he's still kind of with you in a very, very different way, obviously, but yeah. So it's been 2 years, is that right, since he died?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2 years, July 28th, 2019.
Mm-hmm. What's different for you now than when he first died?
Well, I truly believe when you have a profound loss that the first 3 years are the hardest. And mm-hmm. I think that it doesn't automatically go away once you reach year four. But I think those first 3 years are just the hardest. And I'm in, you know, approaching year two, and I still very much feel like I'm in the hardest time. And I do also simultaneously feel that I am not as in the heavy fog that I was in for many months. You know, I think that especially for that first year, I think after you have a profound loss, it's like your life in color becomes life in black and white, and you're sleepwalking and you're here, but you're not here. Time feels ethereal and surreal, and everything in life seems to feel kind of displaced. And it's like you're here, but the ground isn't stable beneath you. And it just kind of feels like you're in a dream. And I think that heavy fog of being in that dream is lifting a little bit, where I start to feel like I can have my feet in the ground again, and I'm mm-hmm. more planted. So I think that I'm not in that kind of intense, I'm not drifting as much, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I still my days, and I've learned a lot about how I grieve and what comes up for me. Mm-hmm. And what I need to do to protect myself during really vulnerable times, like this time of year, for example, when he was declining, the week of his death, leading up to his death, the week leading up to his birthday, the week of my birthday, which happens to also be the week of his death. So mm-hmm. things like that, those milestone dates,
mm-hmm.
I know I need extra planning around those.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I'm starting to reach, you know, this kind of shift where I'm really thinking about my future more now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just in that 100% survival mode. I'm starting to think about, what does our future look like? What do I want?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Andrew and I did talk about that quite a bit. And he told me, you know, what he wanted for me and what he wanted from me and Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like he's here through that, and that he's guiding me and guiding my decision making. And but more than anything, I just really, really miss him. I just miss him and think about him every day, several times a day. Yeah.
I think it's really common when people lose someone they love so intensely, and who is so, you know, is their person, like you're saying, it's like the person is always there, that that your life stops as well. I mean, in some ways, you know, it's like you're saying, like you're just starting to think about the future, because in so many ways, when his life ended, so did yours, you know, your life together and those identities and those things. And it does take time to sort of move through that, and for the future to even be relevant again. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you have a whole identity shift, and you're not the same person in a lot of ways. And I think that softens over time, but it it really changes you, you know, I keep going back to those first 3 years. I really feel like it does really change you. And I, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't think about or talk about, when they think about a big loss is all of the secondary losses.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, having lost a spouse, those secondary losses look like the way that I socialize, the way that I spend my free time, the way that I sleep, the way that I eat, my financial picture, being a one income household, parenting, all of those secondary losses that you don't really think about, you know, you really feel those. So yeah, your whole life changes. You're kind of starting over in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And like you said, even at the top of the interview, just that when you were saying you could really sort of understand some of the nervousness and the loss of confidence that Andrew had, that like you're rebuilding yourself as well, you know, from this traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And
And I do believe that I don't believe that there's a reason this happened. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that we did anything to deserve it. I just believe that there can be some level of, I don't think purpose is the right word, but there can be some level of meaning in the pain. And that's like, you know, a butterfly can, you know, like light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be light at the end of this. And I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I might not ever, or I might not for a long time. Yeah. But I do believe and visualize that I can look back on this in the future and just give myself so much compassion that I made it through. Mm-hmm. And that I can really be proud of what I did and that I'm still standing. And that I raised an incredible human. Okay. You know, I really believe that I can look back at this and pat myself on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Working with people in grief and, you know, people in the hospital setting and things like that, that like there can be something really valuable about finding meaning in the difficult stuff. And you need so much space for that. When you're in it, for someone to be like, here's the silver lining. No, it is terrible. It is bad. And like, we need to be with the terrible and the bad right now. And that it really does take the time and the space and the just allowing the hard feelings to sort of get to the, oh, maybe there is some meaning in this, or maybe I can, you know, learn or grow from this, but it is such a delicate process. And I think we're grief and death is just so still taboo in our culture. And we're not taught about how to be with the people who are grieving, that it's sort of a knee-jerk reaction to jump to those kind of things. When we find out someone we know had someone they love die, well, it's like, here are the platitudes. Here's the like, you know, well, God needed another angel, or, you know, whatever it is. We're like, no, not helpful right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know.
I'll get there. I'll figure it out. It's my process. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There should be more discussion around what are appropriate things to say to a grieving person. What is something that's appropriate to say? Because, and it's different, right? What's appropriate to me might be inappropriate to someone else, or I want to talk about Andrew and I want to talk about our story and some people don't. So I think that it's personal, but I think generally speaking, there are some things to just not say. And we just don't talk about that in our culture.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's one of the things that I've been working on with hospices is doing education in the community about, you know, how do we be with grieving people and some of those, you know, what are helpful things to do and say and what's not. I mean, I think even just, you know, this conversation that where you are 2 years out, that I think people don't, when it's not their own loss, that sort of longer vision of how it impacts people, they're like, oh, it's, you know, it's been a month or two, like I've forgotten about it. No, like when people experience significant loss, like it impacts their lives really forever. I mean, and that timeline is so different than like the outsider perspective of that timeline. And just having that, the sort of, I mean, I guess for me, in my approach to the world, it's just that like everyone's carrying something, right? Mm-hmm. Like everyone's got something that's hard, and to allow some space and some grace for what somebody's got going on that I don't know about, because it might be something from years before I met them or, you know, whatever, but that we've all got something.
Yeah. And I need to remember that too, you know, I mean,
I think we all do.
Yeah, we all do. I mean, that's so true. We all have stuff that we're dealing with. Yeah.
It's interesting too, though, because one of the things I often talk with people about grief, especially like early grief, is that like grief is actually quite selfish and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, it's gotta be about you for a while. And if you're like, no, I don't want to go whatever to, you know, game night, or I don't want to, you know, interact with folks or return a phone call, that like that's appropriate, you know. And I think that's really hard. It's hard to be selfish sometimes and say like it's okay to put me first, especially on the heels of being a caregiver for so long, right? That like it's like a 180 degree shift from all you do is give to like, oh, I gotta look at me for a while.
Yeah. And it's weird because you don't even know like sometimes what to anticipate that you'll need, or maybe what you need today is not, you know, very different than what you need tomorrow. And it's hard. That's why I just say one day at a time, because I mean, especially in these days that are really fragile, like leading up to his death, it's, you just never know how you're gonna feel. But I do have I've learned to really lean on some specific coping techniques that have helped me. And I just keep going back to those.
Are there any you'd be willing to share, like what is helpful for you?
Yeah, exercise is huge. You know, and like if you can, I had wrist surgery recently, so I had to step away from CrossFit, but I'm going back to CrossFit in 2 weeks. I do that 3 days a week, and that's, you know, that's hard exercise, and you're really working yourself, and it's cathartic. I mean, I've had many days in there where I'm crying and my coach knows my story, and it's just, you know, having that intense exercise that can really allow you the kind of mental clarity when you're done, right? Rather than just like walking around the block. But since I've had my surgery, I've had to just walk, you know, just walking and not doing anything that's using my wrist. And even that's been really nice. So just getting outside, getting fresh air, getting some form of exercise is huge. Prioritizing sleep the best that you can is really, really important, because when you're not sleeping, you're just frazzled and everything feels so much more intense than it is. And I know for me, if I'm not sleeping, I'm highly, highly sensitive to things and to what people say. And it creates just not a good environment for me. And I think just being really strategic about who you spend your time with and who you let in and who you share with, because not everyone knows how to handle, you know, what you're going through or how to respond to what you're going through. And that can make you feel even worse.
Right.
And I would definitely say find a good therapist. That's huge. Years to find a good therapist, and she's the best therapist I could ever have dreamed of. And Yeah, so I think that's really, really important. Have a good person you can talk to.
Yeah, I was thinking about what you're saying about the exercise and our bodies is that, you know, grief lives in us, in our physical beings, as well as in our emotions and our mind. And so having some way to, you know, we use the word process about our feelings, but like there is something about that physical piece too of processing, like moving our bodies and allowing them to kind of work through some of the stuff for us in a physical way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If that's available to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say grief is, you hold it on a cellular level. Mm-hmm. And I totally feel that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're coming pretty close to the end of our time, and I want to just kind of leave some space if there's anything else from your story that you didn't get to share that you'd like to include, or kind of anything else that feels like it wants to be said?
I don't know. I think, you know, when I look back at our story, you know, people ask me, like, if you would have known what was going to happen, would you have done it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. There are fleeting moments and I'm like, it's, you know, I'm going through something so hard that I'm like, why did I do this to myself? You know, what was I thinking? There are moments that solo parenting is so hard and I feel so lonely. You know, I was putting my daughter to bed a couple weeks ago and I just cried when I was putting her to bed and I like cried on her. I'm like, oh my God, she I was crying so hard. She thought I was laughing.
Because
I was like on her crying and it was just like one of those really hard solo parenting days, you know? And I thought, what am I doing? Like, why did I sign up for this? You know, but if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't have done it any differently because I'm so grateful to have loved wholeheartedly, completely, have fallen in love so completely. And have a piece of our love story for the rest of my life. And our daughter is our love, the legacy, our legacy. And she's our love story in real life. And she is the best thing that's ever happened to me. She's the best thing that's ever happened to Andrew. And I just feel so grateful that I have her and that I had the love that I had and still have. And I think that, you know, I'm so grateful that I was naive and fearless and did that. And I think that that's what I would share with others is like, if you want something, go for it. If you want to be a mom, go for it. You know, if you, whatever it is, like, try not to hold back because life is short. Life is so fragile. Life is not guaranteed. And, you know, 9 months after Andrew died, my dad died and he had a very similar end of life that Andrew had, and it was really traumatizing reliving a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he had a very similar experience where he was not accepting that he was dying, and it just reminded me all over again of the fragility of life.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just want to reemphasize how grateful I am and the gratitude that I carry for our love story and that how big of a part of my life story it is. And that if there's something you want that maybe you're holding back out of fear, you know, try to just brave through it.
Mm. Well, Alexis, thank you so much for your honesty and your vulnerability and sharing the story. In some ways I want to say like it's inspirational, but I also feel weird like being like this hard thing you went through is like an inspiration for others in a way that feels like it might minimize it. But I mean, I think it's also a really human story. It's really real and not in a way it is entirely unique to you and Andrew, and it is not.
Right.
So it is like, the condition of being human is that we will love and that people will die.
Yeah.
And it's how we sort of walk that path, right? Like how we choose to engage or not engage with those realities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And a lot of people don't engage with them.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. My husband included.
Mm-hmm.
He did not want to engage with that. And yeah. That's okay. That's his way. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate the way that you expressed that. That felt really good to receive.
Yeah.
This has been Spirit of the Valley with me, your host, Katie Michael Sanchez. Our theme music was composed by Kyle Sorensen. If you have any ideas for future shows, questions about any of the shows so far, or just want to say hi, you can reach me at spiritofthevalleykgvm@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening.